friends, thank you again for listening to the Urban Grace Tacoma podcast. We really appreciate your support and tuning in. Just a little update. The past 12 episodes, we titled it The Last Stop, and that was a specific thing we were doing with 6 episodes of lecture-based and 6 episodes that were conversational based on the previous lecture. We're kind of taking it a bit of a different shift now, and we are having a conversation with various types of people, and they will be discussing things that they have extensively researched or something that they're passionate about, like a hobby or their career. And so you will hear a wonderful eclectic group of individuals who are talking about various things. So every episode will sound extremely different from the next, and that is the exciting part of how we're shifting our episodes. So just wanted to let you know that. And you can find us on most podcast platforms if you just type in Urban Grace Tacoma podcast. Today we are talking about something a little bit sensitive, and so I'm just going to let you know what we're talking about today. We're talking about the Israel-Palestine conflict. If you feel like you are not in a headspace to engage that right now, I encourage you to listen another time when you can, but I just wanted to be very transparent with you about that at the beginning of the episode. And today, our friend Horacio Duval is teaching us. He's done some extensive research on this, and we are so excited to have him here with us. So thank you for being here, Horacio.
Thank you for having me for this, dealing with this very difficult topic.
So we'll dig right in. There's going to be some words we might not know, and we can look it up, and I'll do my best to conversate and ask some clarifying questions. But the first question I have for you is, why did you become passionate about this subject?
Well, I have become passionate about this subject because I've been seeing, like most people, what's going on at this time. Apparently, attempt of genocide of the Palestinian people by Israel. Mm. But I also want first to make a disclaimer. I'm not an expert on the subject. Actually, mm-hmm. I've done some research because of this burden in my heart about the conflict. Mm-hmm. And, after over 2,000 pages of reading and research, I'm trying to bring some knowledge to understand the injustice that mm-hmm. is being committed against Palestinians. Mm-hmm. I must say that I've been sitting on the sidelines for decades because I'm old enough to remember the events of 1967 when the map of Palestine was redrawn dramatically. Hmm. And again, what I see is a great injustice, and it is at the roots of this conflict. Now, it's important to say from the beginning that Jews perhaps have suffered more than any people, and they deserve to have a homeland. There's no question about this. I want everybody to understand that in no way this attempts to this crazy idea of driving Jews out of Israel, much less at this point. Hmm. Now, it is a complex conflict or series of events, people say often, and it is. When you look at the history of that goes back and forth of violence, of war, and agreements that were not kept, and mm-hmm. Keeps on going, and violence begets violence, and then it turns as a spiral. It keeps on growing, and Israel has counted with the support of powers, colonial powers, empires, and finally, with that support, was welcomed to the UN. But I see the roots of this injustice very clear from the beginning.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing that and kind of sharing that you've been wrestling with this for so long. What are some of the roots of this conflict that has been going on for the last 7 decades?
Well, as I said, I colonial powers have been involved in the whole process. So to look at the picture, you have to take a post-colonial perspective. That is, look at empires, look at powers, who has power. And the whole question in the 19th century of seeing the land as an opportunity by European nations to exploit the lands of Palestine, also Syria and Lebanon, and the whole Arab world. And in those days, you know, Egyptologists, archaeologists, and oil barons were interested in the land. But also, you know, if we want to trace a little bit of a historical line, by the end of the 19th century, Jews in the diaspora in Europe were not had not assimilated to their nations, and even worse, they saw persecution, violence made against them, the rise of anti-Semitism, and in the late 1880s, then the pogroms took place in Russia. Pogrom is a Russian word that means brutal attacks. And that caused the beginning of Jewish immigration. And Palestine was the promised land. So they started to settle. The first settlements were beginning to happen in what it is a colonial process. Many historians call this a settled colonial process. That many saw, and looking at the land, many saw that if what it, saw it as it was up for grabs. So many of the Jews under the pressure in the late 19th century emigrated to the U.S. Most probably, but the European Jews, the Ashkenazim as they're called, that moved to Israel or to Palestine rather, were a small minority growing slowly. For decades during the Ottoman Empire, and purchasing land and founding the settlements. They still were a minority after World War II in 1947, when Zionism appeared with all its strength, especially after the Holocaust, you know, the Shoah, using the Hebrew word of the Holocaust. Now, Zionism, according to a Jewish definition, you can find this definition at Jewish Voice for Peace, a website of Jewish American Jews that are on the side of Palestine. Zionism is a form of Jewish nationalism, and it is the primary ideology that drove the establishment of Israel. And what it is this idea that Zion, the biblical term for Jerusalem, and the symbol of the returning of the people to Israel, was in the imaginary of these men. They were all men, or mostly men, under the leadership of Ben-Gurion, that founded, he was not the founder, but founded the Zionist movement. Also, the other events that happened contributed to the immigration of Jews to Palestine and the agenda of founding a Jewish state. The British Mandate, the occupation of the British Empire from 1918 through 1948 in Palestine, the Balfour Declaration of 1917. Balfour was the Foreign Secretary of the British Empire, and he declared that he would support a Jewish homeland in Palestine. All these things, and finally, the United Nations General Assembly Resolution 181 that divided the land between Palestinians and Jews that were already present in 1947. That prompted that Zionist agenda of taking not just the the land allotted by the partition. Mm-hmm. That was the resolution to divide the land. It's called the partition. Mm-hmm. They went on to take much more land than what they had been allotted. And this is the beginning of injustice of what some historians have called ethnic cleansing.
So that's interesting. Why do you call the Zionist? Why do you call what the Zionists did in 1947 to 1948 ethnic cleansing?
Well, I'm borrowing this expression from historian Ilan Pape. He is an Israeli. Mm-hmm. By the way, he's part of a cadre of historians mm-hmm. called the New Historians, who and they're mostly Israeli. No longer see the conquest mm-hmm. of the land by Israelis as a heroic saga. They are revising mm-hmm. and they're seeing the injustice and what took place. Now, ethnic cleansing is a use of force or intimidation to remove people of a different ethnic or religious group from an area. That would be a definition. It is displacing people who have been in the land for some time because they are from a different ethnicity, they have the different religious ideas, different mm-hmm. culture, and different history. And the idea is to push them out to create a homogeneous mm-hmm. state or country or ethnicity and pretty much wiping off those who were in the land before.
Do you mean just making them like move, or do you mean like taking their life? What do you mean by getting rid of them?
Well, that's a very good question. Everything counts. It could be the Jews starting purchasing land, but in their minds were always making the state of Israel a Jewish, white, European, Jewish, homogeneous nation. That's in the even in the diaries of Ben Gurion, the founder of the state of Israel. And to explain further that question, they employed terrorist tactics, and in this case that's what is done in cleansing: threats, intimidation, violence. Incoming Jews even brought bulldozers to, you know, remove all complete towns, you know, and level towns to the ground, and displacing the population, the Palestinian population. They also desecrated holy places, and which that was so offensive for the people. And they had a plan, the village plan, which was they knew every detail about the villages that they wanted to take, the village files, basically. They had a detailed plan of how they were going to take over the villages, removing the Arab Palestinian population. Some historians call this process the de-Arabization. In other words, the wiping off of Arabs from the land. That's why the Zionists were preoccupied about demographics. They wanted to build an homogeneous population. So then you have the displacements and all the problems of displacing people, refugees, and now you can count them by millions after so many years, 7 decades. So the victimhood of the Jews, the Holocaust, instead of giving them this feeling of trying not to make other people's victims, they provoke the Nakba, which is the Arab word for catastrophe. And that's what is still used by in the Arab world to remember the arrival of the Zionists to Israel. Now, interestingly, this historian, Ilan Pappé, who lives in the area, mm-hmm. lives in Israel, has visited the so-called ecological parks that Israel has built. And he says that you can, if you look carefully, you can still see the rubble of the villages that were in the land where the new ecological parks have been built. There was a mild Arab reaction then, and that has grown to be very violent now. Mm-hmm. It's not justifiable, but you can explain it. Now Israel occupies most of the land, except and it occupies even the Gaza Strip and the West Bank, which was the West Bank, basically what is left of what we can call Palestine or the Palestinian nation. Mm-hmm. And so the solution seems to be elusive.
Mm-hmm. So what are the prospects for a solution, in your opinion?
Well, it should be put simple, even though it has been complicated. Mm-hmm. There are two. One is the idea of a one-state solution, of the creation of a single democratic state. Even Ilan Pappé believes in this, perhaps because he is Israeli. He still believes in his nation, and who can blame him? Again, the Jews need the land. They should have right to have a land and be a country. So one state solution is, I believe, a little idealistic. Another critic, American philosopher, language philosopher, and critic, social critic, Noam Chomsky, he's doubtful about the one-way solution, and he is even doubtful about the two-state solution, which is the other option, because Israel has used the idea of the two-state solution to stall any conversation. A way to go to speak of a two-state solution would be to go back to the partition, the idea of the partition, and make it more just. And going back to the Oslo agreement of 1994, I believe, which divides the nation or the land into two nations, and recognizes Palestine as a nation, recognizes Palestinian self-rule and determination. And this is a key crucial point, and ask for the return or redress to the millions of refugees that have been displaced. This was signed by Yasser Arafat and Yitzhak Rabin. Rabin was the first of the prime minister of Israel, and Yasser Arafat, the president of the Palestinian Liberation Organization, and head of a Palestinian state. And it would have been a good way, but Israel has repeatedly not agreed, and it seems that they would never agree to any return of refugees in any way. And now things are much more complicated for that to happen because of the occupation, and before even the attacks of October 7 by Hamas, the situation of the people in Gaza Strip has been very hard, a hardship, and the inroads and encroachment of Jewish settlers or Israeli settlers into not only the West Bank, which you know is surrounded by a wall, but also in Syria, in the Golan Heights. So it's very complicated even to think of a two-state solution right now. Even though President Biden and his cabinet are talking about that after this war ends, if ever ends, they should go back to the negotiation table to talk about a two-state solution.
So you know, out of all the things we talked about, the history, the potential solution, what would you say is your ethical response to this?
Well, first of all, we need to call it an injustice, mm-hmm. and even something more urgent, to call for a ceasefire. And we mm-hmm. have people from everywhere in the world and in the United States, including Jews, asking for a ceasefire, demanding a ceasefire. Mm-hmm. And we need, first of all, to remember a central theological theme of the Hebrew Bible, mm-hmm. which is shalom. Israel has a difficult story, even in the Bible, like the violence of the taking of Jericho, but also the concept of shalom, which is a peace at a significant level that it's hard to comprehend. Mm-hmm. It's the bliss of living together with your neighbor, and it's so much part of the protocol of Jewish people, the idea of welcoming the stranger. Mm-hmm. As I said, called the way in which the state of Israel, as we know it, has come to be an injustice mm-hmm. to the Palestinian people, and call what is ongoing as genocide, as a lot of people yeah. are doing. And for Christians, well, I would say Christians, and I include myself among them, we need to look at some theological or biblical, if you will, mm-hmm. ideas carefully. First of all, the symbol of Zion in the imaginary of Israel, in the modern world, it doesn't work. It cannot mm-hmm. be imposed. It's a religious idea, as Zionism has tried. Mm-hmm. The second thing I want to say is that, you know, Israel is known as a chosen people. And Walter Brueggemann, a Hebrew Bible scholar, mm-hmm. Cautions us not to trace a direct line between the Israel of the Bible and the militarized conquering nation that it might have even nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. The third thing is that the idea of the Israel be chosen in the Hebrew Bible is not limited to Israel. Mm-hmm. God has chosen other peoples. The Promised Land, number four, if we look carefully at the scripture, mm-hmm. Brueggemann says it was losable. Holding to the land was conditional to obedience to the Torah. Mm. And actually, the exile of the Jews in the Bible is a demonstration of how God rejected the disobedience of Israel. Mm. And finally, Christian eschatology. We need to stay away from a literal interpretation of the return of the Jews to Zion as mm-hmm. a condition for the fulfillment of the second coming mm-hmm. or the end of the consummation of the kingdom of God.
Yeah.
Again, the Jews, I see no problem in Jews returning to Zion, but need to share Zion with the peoples that were there for centuries
yeah.
before they are trying to return.
Yeah,
we need to take a look at the injustice that has been taking place for 7 decades.
Mm, yes. Thank you so much, Rossi. I really appreciate this time. I know you said you were not an expert, but you've clearly have studied this extensively and read so much. And I really appreciate you taking out the time to kind of condense it for us today on this podcast. So thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
It has been my pleasure.
Friends, thank you so much for listening today to the Urban Grace Tacoma podcast. We really appreciate your support, and we will have another episode for you next month. Take care.